Welcome to Ideas on Trial. I'm your host, Leopold Ajami, and I have with me my co-host, Ricardo Pinto. Today is a very special episode because we have a new topic that we're going to put on trial, and it's luxury. And we have someone to help us with that topic. His name is Nicolas Shemla. He's a writer, he's a novelist, and a brand consultant with a background in anthropology and 20 years of experience working for global brands and agencies. His first book, Luxifer, was voted best essay on luxury by BF MTV in 2015. And his second novel, Murnau des Ténèbres, was a finalist for the Renaudot Award in 2021. Nicolas, it's good to have you.
Hello, everyone. Good to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Sure. You're reaching out from Paris, aren't you?
Yes, I'm in Paris right now, where I live after having spent many years abroad, but I always find myself coming back to this apartment.
Yeah. Well, we were talking offline that the first time we met was like 7-8 years ago in a conference in Dubai. And exactly. there's two things that I remember from that encounter, because, you know, the first thing is you were talking on stage and then suddenly I hear someone using the expression mind-body dichotomy. So the whole conference was about luxury and then I hear the words mind-body dichotomy. We're talking about ideas and creativity and execution. And I was like, who's that guy? There's someone who understands philosophy or at least has a background in philosophy. So I was hooked. And then I went and talked to you. And then we found mutual interest in so many different things. And then I attended one of your workshops, which was on the whole concept of Luxifer, which today we want to explore. So you want to tell us a little bit about that concept? Like, what is it? What is Luxifer?
Yeah, of course. So yeah, Luxifer, I guess you could call it a concept. Yeah, it's an idea that luxury and Lucifer, the angel, the fallen angel, have a lot in common. And so the book that I wrote is actually as much about Lucifer himself as it is about luxury. And I wrote it using my background in anthropology, which of course has a lot to do with philosophy, but also my experience as a marketer working for luxury or ultra premium brands for many years. And I guess the key idea, well, there's two key ideas behind it. The first is that luxury escapes reason. I don't know if that really makes sense in English, but luxury cannot be reduced to something purely rational and always has to do with fantasy. Irrational dreams, fantasy, passion, desires, but that cannot be reduced to something very linear and rational. I guess that's the first idea, that luxury has a magic and a madness to it. I guess those two words are very important, magic and madness, that will always make it extravagant and sometimes hard to understand and probably shocking. And, you know, I mean, today, I'm sure you've heard all these debates about the private jets and the yachts. And in France, we've had this big scandal about the football players that laughed out as a journalist asked them why they couldn't take the train like everybody else to go from Paris to Nantes, which is only a 2 hours train ride, instead of being in their jets. And so, you know, I guess people are more and more realizing that, yes, the luxury world and the world of luxury consumption and the lifestyle of the ultra high net worth individuals, as they're called in the, you know, the professional world, is shocking. I mean, there is no way to actually justify for it from a purely moral point of view. But of course, there are many ways that you can explain why things are as they are. But basically, yeah, luxury has this madness to it that I thought it was important to emphasize. And secondly, yeah, the fact that this madness was not necessarily, I mean, there was beyond good and evil, let's put it that way. It was beyond good and evil. Because I've always refused to make it a book about condemning luxury. I don't condemn luxury at all. I take it as a fact. It's always been, there's always been ultra rich people and ultra poor people. And there's always been a way of life that is or pretends to be high above the rest and a passion for beautiful things and rare objects. So to me, the question is not whether it's good or bad, but my point was it is beyond good and evil. And the reason, and then I'll finish. The reason I wrote that book was that in my years as a marketer and, you know, going to conferences like the one in Dubai, and I mean, you meet great people, for instance, you, but I felt that, you know, there was a lot of talk about trying to rationalize luxury and talking about good luxury and responsible luxury and sustainable luxury and circular luxury. And basically I felt that, you know, people were missing the point. And, you know, of course it's important to take into account the impact on the environment and stuff like that. But luxury in itself will always be something that is beyond reason and that is just crazy.
This is awesome. And I want to try to unpack that, because you took me back 7 or 8 years back, you know, to that moment, seeing you presenting this idea. And I said, oh, how come I never thought of that? Right? Like you made it look so obvious, but none of us maybe, or at least few of us thought about it. I haven't, but it's so true. And the moment people, I think, understand your approach, they start seeing it everywhere. But in order to unpack the idea, because that's a big statement, right? Let's try to go back to what is luxury. And for most people, you know, when they talk about luxury, it's hard to define. I mean, yeah, it's all about expensive things or being extravagant or being... And then while me and Ricardo were trying to prepare for this session, we were asking, okay, wait a minute. Is there like different categories? Like what's the difference between elegance and luxury? And, you know, is there a different category? So it's a hard topic. So what I want to see is your perspective on what is luxury as defined by everyone and how you're approaching it with your idea of Lucifer.
Yeah, but it's a great question, because precisely that's a key chapter. So of course, Lucifer has never been translated into English, except for the number.
And that's a shame.
the number 3 edition. I mean, the third time I went back to Arab Luxury World, we printed English copies of the book for the people attending the conference, but it's not been translated into English. But so, sorry, if anybody wants to read it, they'll have to
learn French.
But that's one of the key, that's the first chapter of the part of the book where I start to explain why luxury escapes reason, evades reason, or is irrational. The very first reason why luxury is crazy is that no one can agree on what it means. And it's historically the case. It's like if you go to the first appearance of the word luxury in the Dictionnaire de l'Académie, blah, 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 at the end of the 18th century, one of the quotes, you know how dictionaries have this quote?
Yeah.
One of the quotes, something that says, luxury is hard to define. I mean, it's a dictionary telling you luxury is hard to define. And the deeper you dig into semiology works, historical works, anthropological works, the more you realize that no one agrees on what luxury truly means. There is no one, and I mean, I can't go into the details right now, but there is no one economic equation or pattern that says, okay, we can start talking about luxury when it's above that price level. No, that's not how it works. You cannot say, well, it's a question of the ratio between the cost of production and the selling price, you know, and if it's like 10 times, then it's luxury. Not how it works either. So there is no one economic pattern. There is no one category. You know, socks can be luxurious. A toilet brush can be luxurious. You know, you can spend, I mean, I've often said that in conferences, but at some point in my life, I spent €300 for a toilet brush. and I remember the guy at the BHV, you know, which is big department store at the heart of Paris. I mean, they sell it. So, but the guy who was at the cashier, at the teller, he himself was shocked. He was like, "What? Why would you want to spend that much money in a toilet brush?" And I was like, "Well, it's kind of like it's inox, it's silvery, it's shiny, it goes well with my bathroom." I mean, so anything can be luxury. It can, you know, there is no one cat. It's not limited to one category. It's not limited to one price level. It's not limited to one demographics. So there is no one definition of luxury. The one thing that, and you can even say, like, some people will say, well, of course, luxury is something that is rare and precious. Not at all. That's not how it's calculated. Like, if you take, I don't know, the Dior sunglasses or the Tom Ford sunglasses, or even, you know, if you go to higher price brands, they're not rare and they're certainly not precious. And yet they are calculated as part of the luxury turnover of France, being one of the, you know, leading countries in terms of luxury manufacturing. So there is no, you'd say, oh, luxury is everything handmade. No.
So what is it, in your view? What is it? What's that component that makes you say,
well, I was coming to it. One thing that I found by drawing this parallel between Lucifer and luxury is that they might have the same etymology. I don't know if I say that word right.
Yeah.
The same origin of the word. And again, no one agrees on the actual origin of the word luxury. Many people say it's lux, like light, which is the same as Lucifer. Lucifer means the one that carries the light. So basically, luxury would be everything that's shiny or that has some sort of like a radiant property to it. And the one who wears luxury is also supposed to acquire that quality of being full of light and bright. And but the one etymology that most people now agree on is, I think in Latin it's luxus, and it means a dislocation. It means, like, for instance, in French, when you say luxer ton épaule, your shoulder, is when the joint of your shoulder
disjoint,
like that.
Disjointed. Yeah.
And interestingly, that's the same. I mean, that's an idea that you find in Lucifer and in Satan, but also in the idea of the devil. The devil is comes from diavolo or something, which means double. So basically the idea of the devil and Lucifer is the one that makes the step aside, the one that multiplies what is unique. So God is unique, and the voice of God, the truth of God is unique. And then Lucifer comes, wait, there is other truths. So, you know, it starts multiplying. And so
that's it.
And it's also the etymology of sacred. Sacred, the actual meaning, original meaning of the word is the idea of a écart, a distance, a gap between what's sacred and the rest. So, you know, the gods or the statues of gods are here and the people are there, and you cannot break that distance. You cannot break that gap. It's a profanation. It's sacrilegious, you know, blasphemous.
Yeah.
So
that points to
just one. Sure. I think to me, that's the key idea of luxury, is to create that distance with, to be extraordinary, to create that gap with everything that's ordinary. So the people who consume luxury want to believe that they are above the rest or different from the rest, or they want to believe that the moment they're in, even if they don't have this crazy ego that says, well, I'm a king or a queen and, you know, everyone else is just, at least they believe that at the moment when they consume luxury, it's a moment that's above the rest. The people who make luxury want to, or luxury products, they want you to believe, and quite often it is the case, that this product is very different from the rest and it has this or that specific ingredients, materials, that sets it above everything else. And it goes with everything else, like the shops, the districts, the experience. It's always something that creates that distance with the everyday, the everyday life, where, you know, it's just bland and boring and mortal. You know, it's also this idea of trying to reach a higher level of existence But we'll come back to that later, I guess.
That's fascinating. Ricardo, you want to say something?
Yeah, that points to something very interesting, which you mentioned before, Leopold, that luxury, for better or worse, is usually seen as an add-on, as something additional that perhaps is not needed by the person or by the object. And I want to know if you think that what makes something luxurious, I have trouble with that word, what makes something luxurious depends on the perception of the person more than the object itself. Is it something that might change in value depending on how the person wears the object, uses it, and what purposes it uses it for?
Yeah, luxury is highly subjective, and that's another example of how no one agrees on what luxury truly means, is that in the luxury world, you're always regarded as the non-luxury of somebody else. So for instance, you know, there is this big trend of minimalistic luxury, you know, and rough luxe and the anti-bling bling, you know, and the more discreet it is, and the better, da da da. But, and so these people will look at a lot of luxury brands, I don't know, let's say Gucci, for instance, or, and they'll say, oh, that's not luxury, that is so obvious and that is so common, and, you know, or they will look at the Maserati and they would say, ah, no, that's not luxury, because, you know, luxury today is more Tesla. Or even someone would look at Tesla and say, no, that's actually not luxury. The real luxury is to walk to the top of the mountain and stay in this eco resort, you know, where you light up your own candle, I mean, yeah, okay. But then on the other end, you will have the football players that I was talking earlier on. And I'm sorry if that's a blunt generalization, but you know what? There's this whole bling gear part of the luxury population who will look at a Tesla and say, no, that's not luxury. I like my Maserati better. And the day you can buy yourself a Maserati, maybe you can give me a lesson on what luxury actually is. And they want to go to the five-star and beyond palaces of the world. And they want, you know, the big champagne Jeroboam. And even though other people will consider it not luxury because it's not elegant, it's vulgar, it's too obvious, that, you know, so there's always this idea of the perception of what luxury is.
But I wonder if the perception is enough, and here is a challenge. I think it is important, the personal meaning that the person attributes to the object that of luxury. But I think there's something additional to that that adapts to the purpose that luxurious thing is accomplishing. For example, let me concretize this. It's true that there are many styles of designing dresses, let's say, and you have a lot of room to be creative there, to be creative in that area, and to be luxurious, to be elegant, to produce something elegant. But you cannot accomplish that with steaks. With meat.
You mean you're talking about the Lady Gaga dress?
Yeah. I wouldn't dare to say that's luxurious. And I don't think in any conceivable universe it would qualify as luxurious.
Why? So that's a question about whether there's an objective way to judge luxury.
Yeah, and that's why I wonder, there are some objective criteria or some criteria that depends on what you're trying to accomplish. And in this case, you're trying to accomplish that celebrity, an important person, looks very good, prominent in a public event. She look prominent, but I don't think anyone can look good with a steak dress. Why? Because it's smelly, is gross.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, in many ways. Sorry. Yeah, go on.
No, and it's associated with crude things, but being crude and being flamboyant is not necessarily, I guess this is the what I'm trying to get at. To be extravagant may be a sign that you are pretentious, that you are presumptuous, yeah, but that to me, that isn't necessarily luxurious.
What do you think, Nicole?
I would say, no. I mean, first off, I wouldn't want to sound like the guy who's crazy about the meat dress of Lady Gaga, and I don't want to be necessarily the one defending it. But sure, from an objective perspective, I would say you are using subjective perception to say, well, I don't think it is, maybe it's too crude or too extravagant. The fact is that if you were to fall back on very objective criteria, like it's unique, it's rare, it might even be precious because, you know, I don't know, like maybe she used Argentinian meat, or I don't know, or what's the word of the Japanese beef? That's a Wagyu beef, you know, and it's ephemeris, which is even more like, I think it's even more poetic, you know, like that dress is only here one night and then it's going to rot away. And she certainly stood out. She was the queen of that night. So I would argue that if there were ever objective criterias of what luxury actually is, she's probably ticking all the boxes. And then there is this subjective reaction of saying, well, that's a little bit gross, and I'm sorry for the animals and da-da-di. But the idea of crudeness is, you know, I mean, if you look at guys like Jean-Paul Gaultier or John Galliano, and I know we're talking fashion, but we're talking very high-end fashion, like usually regarded as luxury fashion, catwalk and you know, haute couture. I mean, he made dresses with, or that looked like homeless, the way homeless people dress, or, you know, using a garbage or a newspaper. If you look at what Demna, I can never pronounce his family name, but the director from Balenciaga, you know, if you look at what he's doing with his creation, like when he made the IKEA bag, I mean, it was made of leather, veal leather, handcrafted, super sweet and rare. So, you know, again, ticking all the boxes of luxury, but, oh, is that luxury? It looks like an IKEA bag. I mean, and I guess that's also part of what luxury is always reconsidering the status quo and standing out and having a quality that's more, that's another, you know, I talked earlier about the gap and the distance that is at the heart of luxury, the way I defined it in Luxifer. The other dimension in which luxury creates this gap is that a luxury object is always more than simply an object. So, because it is so heavily loaded with imaginary dimensions,
interpretation,
symbolic perceptions, tradition, like it's a door. The way I define it in Luxifer is like a luxury object is always a door open to other dimension. It's like the mirror glass in Alice in Wonderland. And through the luxury object, you will access a whole other world. It can be the 18th century, it can be the future, it can be the world of celebrities, or it can be, I don't know, the world of whatever makes you, ticks your fancy and makes you dream and was the inspiration for the designer, or, you know, so I think that's an important aspect of luxury.
Okay.
But, I mean,
here's something interesting.
It's always a mix of objective and subjective, I would say.
Yeah.
No, it's kind of an easy way out, but.
Okay, so here's something I've been thinking about while you're talking, because the way you laid down the foundation of the idea is so interesting. Like, I was like, wow, there's a whole Platonic concept when it comes to luxury. Like, you're opening a new reality and people are attracted to that new reality. And I love the idea. I've never thought about it this way, but it's so true that we're creating a distance. When I see a commercial by Cartier, for example, I'm like, wow, this is a world I want to live in. I know I will never be there because it does not exist, but this is where I want to live. And by buying that product, I'm gaining that separation. I'm creating that distance that I can belong there in this new reality, which is fantastic. But which begs the question, why are we attracted to luxury? And just however you want to answer that, because I'm also thinking about something related to Lucifer. And definitely there's more than just the etymology aspect of why you link luxury and Lucifer. I think there's some kind of a connection that we're attracted to our dark desires or our dark side. We're attracted to that which is dangerous and fantastic. And so what do you think? Why are we attracted to luxury, whether we can afford it or not?
That's a very, very good question. I don't know that I have an answer. What I was thinking, at least at the time when I wrote the book, I mean, for me, we live in a Luciferian world. We live in a world where Lucifer has completely won. I mean, if I was a believer, like if I believed in that cosmology of, you know, God and the devil, I mean, if you read the Bible, it's obvious that, you know, God has lost and Lucifer is everywhere. And everything that Lucifer stands for is literally everywhere and victoriously so. Like, it's not even hidden, you know. I've just finished my last novel, talks about 19th century spiritism. And, you know, at the time it was all like dark societies and stuff, but now it's all out in the open. The only difference is that we don't talk about Lucifer because no one, you know, really bothers with that. But the reality, it's here, it's everywhere. You know, everyone does whatever they want and the society is ultra violent and it's ultra sexual. And it's just like, basically everything that was forbidden is now absolutely the main drivers of society. And again, I don't know if it's good or bad, but what I'm saying in Lucifer is that there is definitely a price to pay for that. I mean, at least if you go back to the original books, there's a price to pay. So yeah, going back to your question, which was kind of like part of the answer was that, but I think we all have a desire to elevate ourselves above and beyond the immediate temporality, linear temporality of the everyday. I think everyone's afraid to die, or even if they're not afraid, they just don't want to die now or to... And so, you know, I guess anything that connects you to a higher level of existence or perception or consciousness, or gives you the illusion that you might be eternal, even if just for one day, you know, it's the David Bowie song, we can all be heroes just for one day. I mean, to me, that's luxury. It's like you want to believe that you're special, because we live in a world where no one wants to be told that they're just one of a million, and then again, it's not necessarily completely true. There's a big trend back to super conservative reactionary religions, and I say religions in plural, you know, where a lot of kids, I guess, are completely, what's the word? I mean, they look at what this philosophy has brought about and they don't want to be part of that world. And they go for the actual opposite. Like, they want to disappear and they want to be just one in a million. And they want to be just like a good sheep, is the word? I don't know. Like, a, you know, like a, just a quiet and so, yeah.
Follow the rules.
Huh? Yeah, follow the rules. But more than follow the rules, just... I think there's a big trend of coming back from this cult of the ego. I mean, even though, you know, when you look on Instagram and everything, you know, it's all about influencers and me. But when you look at the reality of what's going on, there's a lot of, especially young kids who just want to disappear. Not disappear, but they just want to be part of the group and not stand out.
I want to go back to one of the first things you said. You mentioned that one of the failures or weaknesses of the luxury industry is that they attempt to rationalize luxury when it doesn't need to. And I don't know if I agree with you that Lucifer won, because the what you can call the Luciferian desires that people have also need to be rationalized. People, when they engage in or when they try to accomplish their inner and what you call dark desires, they try to make up a justification to be approved, to not be condemned. And this is where I wonder whether luxury is really irrational, whether it truly escapes the, you know, human reason. And this is how I think about it. It is true that you can, you do not need that specific watch, that specific wine that's been cultivated for so many decades. You don't need that judge in the concrete form, in its concrete expression as it exists. It might be true, but if you consider, if you look at it from a wider perspective, you do have a human need for pleasure, a psychological need to satisfaction and to live your day, no, not like an ordinary common man, but to be able to say, I not only exist, but I enjoy every minute of this same world. So would you say, isn't that a rational desire, a rational thing to pursue that finds its expression in eventually in luxurious objects?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know again this, but I would say mostly yes. I think, yeah, you can post-rationalize. But first off, I mean, the idea of enjoying life on Earth with expensive things or rare and precious things, let's say that in the perspective of the church, it has long been regarded as Luciferian. I mean, now we can say, you know, because we're not children of the church anymore and we've been told different things at school, we can say, no, it's not at all, it has nothing to do with the devil. It's just what life has to offer. Okay, but up until 100 years ago, it was completely regarded as something that the devil would come to you at night and say, ooh, you should spend all your money that you saved your whole life into that bottle of cognac or into that dress that will make you look fantastic. So I'm just saying it has long been regarded as Luciferian. So now we can say, no, Luciferian has not won. It has nothing to do with that. But for nearly 2000 years, that's what they said. And again, it is often said that the greatest victory of the devil is to have everyone believe that he no longer exists. I would just say that.
I said so. Sir.
I realize now that I will probably come across as the guy who's obsessed with the devil, which I'm not. I mean, I'm completely not. I am not a very religious person, and I don't.
In fact, I want to say something here on your obsession with the devil, just for our listener, that you are actually all, which is something we missed. You wrote a book celebrating heroism, and it was a book about Mike Manzer, the bodybuilder. And yeah, I invite anyone who can speak French to check it out. It's called Monsieur Amérique. Monsieur Amérique, yeah. So we know you're not obsessed with the devil.
But I mean, he also had a very strong dark side, and he was also a victim of his own demons. So I don't want to come across as the guy who says, oh, the devil is everywhere. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying we all have a dark side, and it so happens that, at least in our Western cultures, the devil was a good expression, a good embodiment of all these crazy turmoil that we have inside of us. So that was to your first point. But to the second point, I don't think it's completely irrational. I would say there's probably a lot of research that shows that it's a survival instinct, that if we didn't do that, we will all commit suicide. But I'm not sure that's necessarily true. And I think when you try to rationalize it, you will if you're honest with yourself, you will come at the conclusion that these are post-rationalizations, but not actual rationalization. I don't know if that makes sense, but I don't think they're really convincing alibis. I mean, you can always deconstruct them. And again, if you really try to look at it with no emotion, you will realize that there's actually no real justification for any of it.
But isn't this whole discussion a lot like, I don't see the, I mean, it's a lot like writing a fiction story, right? The story, let's say you're writing Alice in Wonderland. The story is not rational, right? Which, as it should be, it's a fantasy story. But the process of making it is completely rational, or at least involves a rational process. And I think that's the line here. So if I'm, and I think, I don't know if that's part of your book, Nicolas, but I think...
Yes, Ricardo, to your point, I think, you know, you could say... I would rephrase what I said. I would say that there is hardly any rational justification for spending that much money for that pleasure, whatever it is, like bed sheets or... But I'm not finished. Just true. That's the first part of the sentence. So to your point, I would start by saying there's hardly any rational justification. Like, you know, you spend 1,000 euros on bed sheets just because you think that there is some like biological need for you to enjoy life. No, I really don't think that can stand from a purely rational point of view. Or I don't know, 15,000 euros for one night in a Bora Bora resort. Really? Not necessarily. But the main point, I think, is not that. The main point is, okay, well, maybe not 1,000 euros, but what about 500 euros? Okay, no, 500 euros is still a lot. So, and that's my point, is like there is no level at which point you can say, unless you live in a 100% communist country, you know, mind controlling, and where everything is regulated, you cannot set a threshold at which it is okay to spend that much money on bed sheets, you know. And so that's where you go into, like, say you created that threshold, and the closer you get to the threshold, the more it opens up, and you realize that, well, it's not a threshold at all, because then what is the justification? Coming back to bed sheets, are they handmade? Or maybe they're even better if they're not handmade, but they're made by some machine that makes them even softer than any hand can make them. Or, you know, is it natural organic materials? Or, you know, and there's all these criteria which makes that everyone will find value wherever they want, or for whatever they've been told. And that's where it gets, again, completely irrational. So maybe there is a rational way of justifying our quest for self-satisfaction and pleasure and enjoying life, but it's not necessarily a justification for luxury. And so the whole thing is, okay, it's rational to look for pleasure, but at which point does it become irrational? And that's where the whole thing becomes irrational. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I would say that here, it is true that you cannot legislate the categories, the patterns of luxury from a high level. But here is where context is important. And one of the things that I often think is that you are truly luxurious, or you're truly elegant, to talk about the wider category, not by showing off what you have, not by wearing the most shiny dress, but there's also something that perhaps is even more precious, which is the qualities of your character, right? And I was trying to think, what's the difference between, say, the celebrities that you see are pretentious, show off, and that for all external appearances are luxurious, and someone like Sean Connery, the actor James Bond.
I mean, again, I think, okay, so first off, luxury and elegance are different things. And of course, a lot of people would argue that you cannot be a luxe person if you're not elegant, but that's a very specific and particular aspect of luxury. It's a specific demographic that will define things like that. But the reality of the luxury industry is that it is beyond elegance. And so these are two different things. And interestingly, elegance also raises a lot of questions that luxury raises of what is the equation of elegance? Can elegance be, and I worked a long time ago on a campaign for a cognac brand in China, and it was, the whole campaign was join the new elegance. And so it was a lot of different Chinese guys, very high net worth individuals, blah, 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 discussing elegance and what it means to be elegant. And, you know, elegance is a great concept, but it raises the same question. Like, there is no one definition of elegance. But going back to Sean Connery, I mean, I love him. But a lot of people would say, you know, they would come back at you and say, oh, no, not at all. He's not, you know, because he's been accused of being a misogynist, and he's in the embodiment of white patriarchy, you know, and James Bond is an imperialist macho at the service of the empire that destroyed so many black lives and beyond. So no, I'm sorry. This is very subjective. I don't have these issues with him. I think he's a great guy. And of course, I think he's way more elegant and luxurious than any of the TikTok, you know, influencers today. But I think my job, at least when I write on luxury, is to try to look at what it is in the world as it is lived by people. I mean, of course, personally, I can come and say, well, that TikTok person looks gross, and I think whatever they wear, they will never reach that level of elegant luxury that I aspire to. But as a person who writes on luxury, and I think that's the beauty of the concept, is that it includes all this. Like, if a TikTok influencer that has nothing on Sean Connery, because imaginary person, has no talent, no nothing, but he's just very influential for whatever reason. You know, if he or she decides that they want to buy the latest limited edition of a very rare Hennessy cognac designed by, I don't know, Anish Kapoor or Jeff Koons or whatever, and spend 25,000 euros for it, that's part of luxury. And I can disapprove of it, and I can say, ooh, that's not really cool or elegant, but that is part of luxury.
Okay, Nicola, I wanna segue a little bit to another thing that I find interesting, and I'm sure our audience will find it too. So, okay, so from one perspective, here you are writing on luxury and Lucifer, but from another perspective, you're writing about heroes and Mike Manzer and bodybuilding. And then another day, you just told me you're writing something, or you wrote something on bourgeoisie and politics. What is it exactly? And how do you do that? Like, how do you jump from different interests? And I find that fascinating.
I don't know. Is that really the topic? Okay, so, well, I
want to see if there's a link between the two. So
there is.
Yeah.
I mean, first off, from a professional point of view, I'm a strategic planner. My specialty, my expertise is brand strategy. When you work on brand strategy, I guess there are two things that are really important, but the second is two things in itself. The first thing is having your finger on the pulse of society, you know, so it's basically being an anthropologist / sociologist / psychologist, trends analyst, and, you know, just getting the zeitgeist. And when I wrote Lucifer, I felt that it was important, you know, that people were repeating some mantras on luxury, but actually missing a big part of what it actually is in the world, in Shanghai, in Dubai, in Paris even, you know, and they will always have this very specific idea of the luxury consumer, but, you know, never talk about the NFL player or the PSG champions, you know, but they're a big chunk of, you know, or I don't know, all the kings and queens and or mafiosis or what. I mean, that's a big, big part of the luxury consumption. But so the second thing that's important when you're a strategic planner, the way I see it, is ideas and words. You have to, I mean, what I sell to my clients is very sharp ideas that kind of like are current, but also open up futures for their brand and company. So super sharp ideas, visionary ideas, I would say. But it's also important to be able to express them with the exact right words. So precision, I think, is a big quality that is too often disregarded because it's not cool. You know, it's not very cool to be too precise.
Yeah.
But I love precision. And I think,
tell me about it.
I think as a strategic planner, you have to have great ideas, but you have to find the right words to express them. And so that's where my writing activity as a novelist now, but starting with two essays, so Lucifer and the other one on Bourges, Bourgeois, but they're all part of the same thing. I mean, it's just, my books are, I hope, examples of a certain ability to see things differently and to connect dots differently, but also to express them in a way that makes sense and that can be enticing or enchanting. So that's one connection. But then you were talking about the specific connection between Lucifer and heroism, because yes, I wrote that novel. So I call it a novel, but it's a biographical novel. So it's the life and death of Mike Menzer, who was a bodybuilding superstar in the 1970s. And he was really a worldwide superstar. He was known everywhere from San Francisco to Tokyo, all the way through, you know, Joburg, Sweden, wherever. Like, and bodybuilding in those years was really huge. I mean, it didn't last really long. It's basically after Pumping Iron, you know, the documentary that stars Schwarzenegger and Lou Ferrigno. After Pumping Iron, up until, I'd say, 1985 or 6, bodybuilders were really, like, regarded as superstars. And so there was a cult following everywhere and big readerships, like all the magazines were selling like hotcakes. And Mike Menzer was a huge star of that era. And he was the nemesis of Schwarzenegger. And Schwarzenegger completely erased him from history in such a way that hardly anyone remembers Mike Menzer, aside from a few nutcases like me. And his life is really like everything you'd expect from a beautiful Hollywood biopic. You know, like, he started as nothing and he went all the way up there, became a superstar. And then the second part of his life, after Schwarzenegger officially cheated, I'm not the one saying, like, everyone agrees that he bought the jewelry and at the 1980 Olympia in Sydney. So that completely destroyed Menzer, who already had, I guess you could say, some psychological issues, but everyone has. But so the second part of his life was just like a downward slope through prison, institutionalized, you know, like a psychiatric ward.
But he was a hero in so many angles, right?
Yeah.
The reason I'm asking about the connection between luxury and hero, or whether you had any connection in mind, is because you said at the beginning that you regard luxury as somehow beyond good and evil. And I don't know, I don't have a view. I'm no expert in luxury. And definitely I can see the representation of what you call Lucifer. When I look at Louboutin shoes, for example, I can see the pain that a woman goes through, right? Like, but at the same time, it's regarded as luxurious, for example. So, but I'm not sure, and maybe that could be a topic for another episode, because I'm really interested to dig into whether we can use that knowledge on luxury or all these ideas of luxury in a way to better our lives or better our characters. I don't know if you have any ideas there, but it's like when you're studying creativity, right? Or you're studying communication skills. You know that these skills are not just applicable in one situation. You know you can use them in your life. I was wondering if luxury or the world of luxury can, even if you regard it as beyond moral good and evil, whether you can actually use it in your life, the ideas, the aspirations, the sense of.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so, I mean, I don't know, there are many different dimensions that can connect the two. But so first off, this idea of heroism and following your path and not listening to the back, what I called earlier, I think it was before we started recording, the background noise. And, you know, there is the troupeau, what you call it, the herd.
Yeah.
And there's the hero, the one that opens up a path. And that's what Lucifer is. And that's what luxury does initially. Or that's what luxury brands or designers are supposed to do. And that goes back to the initial, you know, conversation with Ricardo about, you know, can something be truly luxury if it's too mass, or if it's not, if it's what everyone else does, or, you know, it's, and I would say, well, it could, but most likely no. And I would agree with Ricardo that, you know, to be actually luxury, you have to stand out a bit and be unique and not just follow the stereotypes. Or, but so in a way, there's this idea of heroism as, you know, following, opening up a path mm-hmm. and following it because you believe in your own, in a truth that you've identified or that you identify with, and that you will go to the end, follow that path, that vision. And I think a lot of creative designers, whether they're artists or fashion designers or luxury innovators, they would fall into that category, or at least identify with that category. And, you know, this idea that they have a vision and that they cannot just follow what everyone else is saying or everyone else is doing. But that takes some ego. You know, you have to strongly believe in yourself.
Yeah.
To
and courage.
Follow your, but then another, courage. Courage and confidence. But also, I would say, a clear mind. You know, you have to be able to look through the clutter, you know, the laser sharp. Again, I was talking about sharp ideas, but looking at things with a very sharp eye, because the reality is covered by the clutter of what everyone else is saying, of, you know, the current superstitions or beliefs or things that people want you to believe because it's good for their own business.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to really push that away and look through it. Anyway, so that's one thing. The other aspect is when you say about how luxury can inspire our lives, or I would say, yeah, I mean, again, I would come back with to what Ricardo was saying earlier. And again, I personally would agree with that when luxury is good luxury, I don't like that expression, but yeah. I would say true luxury supposedly has to do with an actual exceptional quality, whether it's handmade or completely technological, you know, like an iPhone, or I don't know, like a super good phone, because I guess some listeners would say, no, iPhone is terrible. But anyway, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be handmade, but there has to be some exceptional quality. I think the way I see it, and that goes against ideas that you would want to deconstruct and put on trial, you know, I think luxury brings back the idea of a hierarchy of things.
Mm.
You know, not everything is equal. And I would even say not everyone is either. We're all born equal, but even that. Let's say we should be born equal in front of the law, but the reality, the sad reality.
Not everywhere.
not everywhere. And even from a biological perspective, it's terrible to say, but we're not all born equal. But anyway, let's not talk about people. Let's talk about just objects. Luxury brings back the idea of a hierarchy, measurable hierarchy, or true luxury. Because, you know, of course, there's marketing luxury. And then you would say, well, I'm sorry, but those Dior sunglasses are just, I'm sorry for Dior. I'm just using them as a terrible example. But, you know, like these ex-luxury brand sunglasses are just terrible quality compared to handcrafted artisan frames like the ones I'm wearing. Anyway, so there is a hierarchy of products. There is a hierarchy of qualities. And luxury initially goes against overconsumption. You know, it's like supposedly you buy a luxury product because it's going to last longer, because it is made by actual people. You know, it's not mass produced. You know, and if you compare luxury to, how do you say grand distribution in English? Like supermarkets,
distribution. Yeah, mass distribution.
mass distribution, it is more sustainable, supposedly. Yeah. Small batch, you know, crafted, good quality ingredients, tradition and savoir-faire and legacy and know-how transmitted from one generation to the next. I mean, that's what sustainability is, or a big part of what sustainability is supposed to be. So I think that's inspiring in our everyday life. The idea that, you know, you don't have to, I don't know, like maybe the best way to save money is not to buy the cheapest crappy product that's immediately available in one click.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the wiser thing to do is to spend a little bit more time researching, a little bit more time going to the actual store and talking to a human being, and a little bit more money to spend to buy a product that has more quality to it. So I think, yeah, in that sense, luxury is very inspiring and can inspire many solutions to today's problem.
And you just inspired, so before we end this session, you just inspired two things. The first one is, Ricardo, we're definitely doing an episode on the concept of hierarchy, right? Like, I think that could be a moral hierarchy and value hierarchies. I think that could be really interesting. And the second thing, which is a question, an open question, I'm going to leave it to everybody. And I'm going to spend some time thinking about it. But I was wondering, and maybe it's a good reflective idea, if luxury is something that you buy or something that you earn. I don't know. Is luxury something you buy or something you earn? I don't know. That's worth another episode, probably, hopefully soon. So I want to say thank you, Nicola. That was so inspirational. I didn't want to stop you from talking because it was so inspirational. You're so into that world of luxury. And I wish you the best in your work and in your writings. Do you have any, I don't know, link that people can check your work, or we put anything in your, in the show notes, or no?
No, I mean, I have sent you the covers of my book, but everything is in French. I mean, okay. I work internationally, but my books are in French. They have not been translated yet.
We'll put them in the show notes in French for sure. Maybe
But even like, you know, I often write for some online papers and stuff, but it's all in French. So I don't think that would be very useful to your audience. But thank you so much for that invitation. It was a great pleasure. And if you want to make another one, I'd be more than happy to. And all the best to Ideas on Trials and to you guys.
Thank you. And, thank you, Nicola.
We'll talk again soon.
Good. Thank you for listening to Ideas on Trial. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Twitter. And don't forget to share your questions if you have anything. That's how we're building our episodes, based on your questions. Have a good evening and good day.